Good morning. How we doing? Go Broncos. Can we just say that right off the bat? If you're wondering about the attitude of the Denver culture today, we're a humble lot. We have no idea how we're in the Super Bowl. Seriously. Like nobody thinks we should be in there. We think kind of, you know, maybe middle tier, but somehow the Lord has shined his mercy upon our town. We get to watch Peyton Manning try to throw something over 9 yards today. But I asked Tyler, I said, Tyler, hey, how about a ticket to the game, being that I'll be in town? And I thought, okay, this was my perception, is that Tyler is a big deal here in East Bay. And he invited me to some little breakfast with all sort of the famous Hall of Famers yesterday morning downtown. So I thought, getting me a ticket, no big deal, but he did not come through. So I'll be watching it in some bar today. So anyway, good to be with you. It's kind of surreal to actually be here watching the Broncos as a Coloradoan. Mostly weird because about 7 days ago, I packed up a U-Haul full of all of our stuff, and we left a really beautiful four-acre ranch that overlooks the Rocky Mountains, just 20 minutes south of downtown Denver. And we moved to a little town called Alton, Illinois. Anybody know where Alton, Illinois is? So are you weeping for me as you wave your hand? So we're going to talk a little bit about that. It does fit the theme, though. When Tyler told me what the series was, I at least knew what I would talk about today. This idea that the gospel is a story of what Jesus came and did for us on the cross, what it releases us to do. But the part of the gospel I find that sometimes we forget is that it's an invitation to literally day by day follow him one day at a time. And that as we do that, stuff starts to happen. Now, I am the national director of a missions training network. It's called Forge. And our motto is to help every single person in the world learn to live as a missionary where they already do life. So it's kind of a cool motto. Love to do it. I travel somewhere every week, mostly speaking to church leaders, because right now the church in America is on the fastest decline we've ever seen. There's no denomination in America that is seeing an increase. In about 10 years, we will be as unchurched as the rest of the real world. Australia, South Africa, the UK, Canada, Portland, Oregon. Okay? That it's coming, no matter what you think. Something about hoping that people will come to our churches, those days are over. People are not coming. And so it's what we call the Missio Dei of God becomes what we call the center of the cinnamon roll. The main conversation God is having with leaders all over the world is somehow we're going to have to learn how to get back out there again like we used to. Now, as a director of a national movement, I've learned that oftentimes what you say or you're trying to get other people to do, God will sometimes test you at. And so this is what happened. It was actually when I was here a few months ago, Tyler was one of the first people that I shared the story. I was sort of half punch drunk from what had just happened literally a day before I came here to do the Q Place. But my wife and I had an experience in a little bar in Alton, Illinois, that literally changed our life. And I told Tyler, like, I think I have to move to this little place called Alton. And so really the last couple months since I've been here has been a huge shift for my family, my wife and I. And I kind of want to give you the backstory just so you have some picture of this. And I think you'll see that I'm not going to try to get you to do something today. That this is so raw in who I am right now. This is really for me. I'm going to have a conversation with myself today. And you get to overhear it. But our family, it's been kind of a weird story. Our son Ryan, who's now 29, has had severe epilepsy since he was born. So day one began to have, you know, I mean, many of you have had friends that had epilepsy. His started to ramp up quite a bit. And by the time he was 5 or 6, he was having about 30 grand mal seizures a day. So almost every half hour, there was something going on that really sort of was changing our experience. I felt like I was called to ministry. I was in seminary at the time. And his disability was so severe, I had to actually quit seminary. I actually had a conversation with the Lord, like, I thought you were calling me to ministry, apparently not. you haven't healed my son, so I guess we'll just try to make it. So I took on a house painting trade, and we just began to live life. And strangely, my wife, who's a little bit more godly than I am, we had a conversation one day when I was sort of complaining about how difficult our life was. I was maybe operating on about an hour of sleep a night. I would try to sleep with Ryan and do the night duty so that Cheryl could kind of manage him during the day. And I was just saying, babe, it's just really hard. Like, we still have a heart for all these people out there, but we just have nothing to offer. Like, there's no time or energy. And Cheryl made a comment. She said, "Hun, we can at least open up our front door." And we had a talk about, like, okay, well, what could we do? And, you know, she said, "We've got to eat 21 meals a week. We could give some of those away." And so we just started to open up the front door, started to actually go out and meet our neighbors, and just try to form some friendship with whatever little time we had. And eventually our house filled up. And a lot of our friends came to faith. It was kind of a cool deal. I wasn't in ministry at the time. I was just a house painter. And other Christians heard about what was happening, and they would come over. And so we would teach them to do the same thing. And eventually a church was born in Portland, Oregon. And a few years later, I resigned from that. And Ryan's disability was just so bad. We had a brain surgery that was really expensive. We just couldn't afford it based on sort of ministry earnings. And so I went back to house painting. But I was off in New York City, and I was training church planters. I went into this little Irish bar, and I met a waitress. Her name was Fiona. She was probably 23, 24. And that's why when we talk about the series, Following Jesus One Day at a Time, why individual days are so important, because on this individual day, unbeknownst to me, God is doing something. And I speak with this woman, and a conversation begins about the kingdom of heaven. She was experienced some deep sexual abuse growing up in a Catholic school system in Ireland. And when she found out we were there trying to help people start churches, she goes, "Why would you want to start more of those?" And so I began to speak with her about God's design to bring heaven to earth, and that's what the gospel was. And she loved it. And she said, "Could you come back tomorrow night, and could you tell me more about that kingdom stuff you were talking about?" And so for four nights, I went back. The last night, now again, I don't know anything's going on. I'm just a worn out old house painter trying to figure out how to keep my family alive. And went back, and that night Fiona was working, and she said, "Hugh," she brought me up to the bar, and she rounded up about 15 of her friends, and she said, "I have to work tonight, but tell them all that stuff you were telling me about the kingdom of God." And so I got to sit there with these young 20-somethings, and they all loved it. One young boy said, my dad was a Baptist minister. He goes, "I've never heard any of this before." And then a young Catholic girl said, "Yeah, I grew up Catholic. I left when I was 17, but I sat there. Nobody ever told me this stuff." And even though I was tired, I wasn't sure what to do with our son. I remember I left that Irish bar that night, and I broke down. I actually had to sit on the curb. I was heaving tears because I felt like God was going, "Come here." And so I called Cheryl, and I said, "Babe, I think we have to move again." And told her what had happened, and I said, "You can pick a city, anywhere you want to go." So she picked Denver, because at the time she was in love with John Elway. That was the story. I'm not kidding you. That's the spirit leading our family. So we moved to Denver to simply be a missionary team. When people would ask me, they go, "Why are you moving?" We'd say, "We just feel like God has asked us to go. Sending us, and we're going to be a mission team." I called two other friends. I said, "Would you guys go and let's be a missionary team and let's learn how to live life in the kingdom and try to make it tangible to people around us?" And I said, "We're all going to have to get jobs. I'll go back to house painting, but let's just see if we can like live in the same neighborhood and rhythm our lives around these types of things." And so we began to do that, and it happened again. The house began to fill up, and a lot of our friends began to find faith in Jesus, and eventually began to multiply those communities all over Denver. And eventually a church was born out of that again. And honestly, the last 14 years has been that story. We wrote about it, and that's sort of why people have me come speak. But just thinking about that one day with this one conversation and just literally following what happens. And so it's been the best 14 years of my life. Hundreds of friends have found faith. Deep sense of community. And then it got even better. About 4 years ago, we found an assisted living center for my son. And it was in this little place called Alton, Illinois. It's like a Disneyland for adult disabled. And we applied, he got accepted, and we sent him off. He loves it. He never wants to come back. But we would go visit him, you know, 4 or 5 times a year. And every time we would go into this little town, we would just go, man, there's something about this town. It was, it's 10 minutes just north of Ferguson. It's this bombed out old river town right on the Mississippi. It used to be a boom town. And now there's nothing there. There's these beautiful turn of the century mansions with little red brick roads. I mean, it's absolutely gorgeous, but nothing is going on there. It's about 40% African American, the rest white, very racially divided, very, very poor. And so when we would go, they would just go, man, there's something about this town. But we never certainly thought we would move out of Denver to this beautiful place. And then Cheryl and I were there just, you know, a few months ago, and we were in another bar talking to another waitress. She was about 25, and I said, sweetie, what do young people do in this town? And she goes, we just mostly do drugs now. And I wouldn't normally talk like this, but I just blurted out. I said, do you do drugs too? And she goes, you know, I'm working on it, but yeah, a little bit. And then she went off and got our food, and we just kind of sat there and talked. And as we were leaving, you know, and I remember as we were talking to her, I felt like there was, you ever get one of these? There's just something in your chest, like it's, you think it's the finger of God, but you know, but it won't go away. I thought maybe it was the pizza. I wasn't sure. Feel some pressure, like my heart's breaking. And then we left the bar, and Cheryl grabbed my hand, and she goes, we should just sell everything and move here. And it was, we got in a fight. Because the other part of that story is when Ryan left, we actually declared, well, Cheryl declared it would be now the decade of her. That's what she said. It's now, because Ryan's gone, we can go out on dates, we can maybe even take a vacation. I said, babe, what do you want to do? She goes, let's get some horses. So we found a little 4-acre ranch, beautiful. Got this great barn. I turned half the barn into an Irish saloon. I mean, we've had, like, it's literally, that was her life, but I loved it too. It's like, it's literally been the funnest, like, 3 years for us. And so now all of a sudden we're walking down this broken down sidewalk, and Cheryl says, let's just sell everything and try to help out. And so for a couple weeks we struggled and we fought. I really fought with her. She was sure that God was saying, let's do this. She heard God say, follow me. I was the one struggling. And when you begin to think about this, the only way we have some grid for the power of the gospel is to understand what we call the Missio Dei, the mission of God. I have a friend that's just writing a book about all of the sending language in the scriptures. And he sent me his manuscript. And he said, I believe that this is the fundamental, the most overarching, the most powerful sort of essence of our Christian faith, is that God is a sending missionary God who constantly sent prophets and then Jesus. And then Jesus said, as the Father has sent me, I now send you. It's like the essence of being a believer is that we actually get to take on not just the grace of Jesus based on the cross, but we actually get to take on his very mission. A great missiologist by the name of David Bosch said this. He said, it is not the church which undertakes mission. It is the mission of God which constitutes the church. Did you get that? It's the mission of God that actually causes church to occur. He says, we wrongly assume that the primary activity of God is in the church. And that's true. We oftentimes focus so much on what we do in here. Most churches split and fight and whatever. It's usually about stuff that happens in here. I consult with hundreds of churches. They're always fighting about stuff in here, but he's trying to remind us that the primary activity of God is always first and foremost out there in the world. And that the church is God's instrument It's his instrument sent into the world to participate in his redemptive mission. This is why day by day, one day at a time, is so important, because just like I have had several days now that now rerouted our entire experience, and I have no idea what the next 15 years will look like, but those individual days happen. You see that in the very first missionary community, Abraham, Genesis 12. God says, look, I'm going to send you, right? And then all of the world will be blessed. Like, that one day changed it for him. When we read, let me just read this passage. It's the calling of the first disciples, okay? Many of you have probably, we've preached on this, we've looked at it, but just think about this day. It's one day in time. It says, and as Jesus was walking beside the Sea of Galilee, he saw two brothers, Simon called Peter and his brother Andrew. And they were just casting their nets into the lake. They're fishermen. That's just what they're doing. They're just like you and me. They're going about their business. And so Jesus is just walking. I always love to picture Jesus before he actually has human connection, like what he's thinking. You just get a very powerful image where he's watching these boys just doing what they're doing. We don't know if he stood there for a while and just kind of watched him, but eventually he walks up and he just goes, come follow me. And it says they did, and then he says, and so I will send you out to fish for people. So immediately they're coming to follow. In that moment, he says, it will be linked to my mission. And that's what you and I have to process. Sometimes when we say that we're a follower of Jesus, many of us have gone 30 years and we can't remember one moment where God said something and we obeyed and we followed. I've talked to many Christians that get bored of church and they begin to tap out. I just would rather watch a football game today. They've lost their sense of what God is up to in the world, and so there's no meaning for their experience. And you begin to lose meaning for coming to sing songs about this Savior that did something so long ago. It just seems like it's very possible to claim to be a follower, but never really learn the beauty of following. This is what makes the Christian life so artistic and so amazing and so scary at times. And so it's worth talking about today. Let me give you a couple thoughts on being sent. And these are just from me thinking about what God's done. This is now our third trip out, so to speak. And I don't think God's probably going to call most of us to different states. Some of your people in your back wall have been sent to other countries. But if being sent is part of being a disciple, if that was the story of the first disciples, then we become the next wave of disciples. And at some level, it will at least be that we would cross the street, maybe. We'd be sent to some friends that just live on the other side of the fence. It might be that we're sent to the other side of the bleachers. We've been sitting there with our friends for the last 6 years with the same kids. We love our little friends. It might be that there's one day that Jesus just goes, hey, just go sit. You've seen those other men sitting over there watching. Why don't you just go meet them? It could be that you've been working and you never see your workplace as a mission field, but it might be that God would go, look, you've got to have 5 lunches every week. Maybe I could send you on Wednesday. Maybe you could grab a few guys. I mean, the sending nature, it's not based on you going overseas. It's literally right in front of us all the time. And so a couple thoughts about being sent. To be sent and to live a sent life, you first have to leave something. I've thought about, why am I struggling so much to go to Alton? And it's not so much that I'm afraid to go. I actually like adventure. I like the thought of new stuff happening. I just literally don't want to leave. My pain is all in the leaving. My pain is the stories that have happened in our house. I married my daughter, my oldest daughter, last year, and I walked her through our barn by my Irish saloon, had her on my arm. We walked down these rock steps down into our horse arena, and people were sitting on hay bales. We were looking out over the mountains, and I have that memory of my daughter. My youngest daughter said she wanted to do the same thing, and now I have to find somewhere else to marry her. I don't get to do that. There was a lot of memories of my wife and I riding horses, just right from the back of our land. It connected with the Colorado Trail, so we never had to do much work. We just get on the horses and go cruising out, and Remember, Cheryl made a comment one time. She knows I don't like to ride horses. I'm actually afraid of them. But we were out on there one time, and we were finally sitting there together overlooking the mountains. She goes, I just want you to know, like, this is my favorite thing to do with you. Like, right now is the happiest I'll ever be. And I was thinking, well, it's good for you, but... But I mean, there were those memories, like, where I knew that I was making Cheryl very happy by putting on a cowboy hat and going out on the prairie with her. You know, there was an amazing community that we were leaving. My very best friends, it's not just four or five of them. Our little inner church community, really, there's kind of about 60 friends that I would take a bullet for any one. Amazing people. Amazing community we're leaving. It's just hard to leave all that stuff. And when I've talked with other believers about, you know, why we don't go out there anymore, usually it's because we don't want to leave something. Sometimes we don't want to leave our small group. Our small group's been meeting for 15 years. And we know that we've not really ever opened the door to lost friends or to the poor, but we just love each other so much. Sometimes you actually have to have a talk and say, look, there's only so much time left in my life. And I want to follow Jesus now. And our Bible study is not. We love Jesus, we study him, but we don't follow him. Like, sometimes you have to have those talks. That's what missionaries do. Like, you got to give up stuff. It's time to get off the church softball team and sign up for a beer league team. I mean, it's just, these are the days that this must happen again. And so you must leave something. What helped me, I wasn't happy about it, but Cheryl was knowing that I was struggling, and she finally one morning, she goes, so what's your problem? Like, why won't you just commit to hearing what I'm hearing? And I was just like, babe, I don't want to go. And she's like, why? And I just said, I don't want to leave. And she said, look, she goes, babe, if we stay here, we know exactly what our lives are going to be like the next 15 years. And then she talked about it. She goes, you will travel the world. You'll speak, people will think that you're really important and you know what you're talking about, and you'll kind of help church leaders, but you'll come home and then you'll just tinker around the barn. And you have your men up to the barn on Tuesday night, so you'll do a little ministry, but we're not leading congregation anymore. I'm just going to do real estate. We'll have money finally, and we'll get to live on this ranch and look out over the mountains. I'm like, I love that picture. I won't have to take responsibility for people anymore. I'm speaking with you today, but actually, I'll fly out tonight at midnight, and I won't have to worry about you. So she knows that. Good luck. Have a good life. I mean, so no real burden, no real responsibility, mostly just enjoying a 2-million-person resort called Denver, Colorado. And she said, so we know what that picture will look like. She goes, if that was the Lord that was calling us that day in that bar, and we obey, then God will get to write the next 15-year chapter. And I remember that did get me a little bit. And that's about the only thing that will get you to go, I find, is that I think God knows all of us love stuff. We love the world. That's why Jesus oftentimes will try to encourage us, try not to love the world or anything in it. Danville's pretty nice, right? And you can be thankful that you live here, but Jesus would go, just enjoy it, like it, try not to love it too much, because I will eventually say this. Every day I would like to say, come follow me. And it will be harder. The more you try to love all this stuff and follow him, the tougher it will be. We're supposed to try to, in fact, early on when we bought the ranch, it was so nice. I remember Cheryl and I would remind ourselves, look, babe, we have to hold it loosely. We would say that just to try to sound spiritual. We'd never actually thought God would... We thought he was actually giving it to us as a payoff for being so tough and working through all those seasons. We never thought that he'd actually say, yeah, you only get it for 3 years. And so what will get you over the hump? It will be that moment that I had when I really thought what Cheryl said was true. Is I really like all my stuff, but even more than that, more than anything in the world, deep down, when I go to bed at night, when I wake up in the morning, I want to know that God's guiding and giving his favor to our life. And I want to know that I'm doing work that he loves, makes him smile. I've decided in my life, I don't care that when I get to heaven, if God says to me, or Jesus, as he's looking at me, says, you were awesome, okay? I don't need him to say, I just want him to say at least, Halter, you were fun to watch. You hung in there, you didn't quit, you kept taking swings at the plate, little bloop singles, I don't care, you were, thank you. And so maybe consider that. God's given us all so much. And we often say, if you have everything that the world can give you and you don't have Jesus, you don't have much. But if you have nothing that the world has to offer and you have Jesus, you have everything. It's that sense that we know God's given us. It's now not about us. We get a privilege, as Paul would say, to actually suffer for Jesus. And so that's the first part of being sent, is you have to leave some stuff. Second part is that you're going to have to go. And when you go, he's not going to call you to a place. I say Alton, but Alton is just people. God's going to always call you to humans. And again, as I talk to my friends, when we struggle through how much will we really do for Jesus, it's usually that we don't want to carry the weight of people. The great theologian, country songwriter, Billy Currington, said it this way: God is great, beer is good, and people are crazy. And that is true, right? Like if you really go, okay, I'll let God send me, I'll do that. But what if it works? What if he does send you and a relationship forms? That's when we start to worry, right? It's like, oh, because then maybe they would find faith in Jesus, and then they would need help. And then you'd have to not just share with them a message, you'd have to walk with them for 8 years through deep, heavy stuff. That's why the gospel in Isaiah 61, God has sent me to the brokenhearted, to the prisoners, to those that are blind. It's like, poor people, by the way, are very cumbersome, aren't they? And when you dive into that, it costs you some stuff. And the brokenhearted, you don't just give them a little chicken soup for the soul for the day and they just pop out of their discouragement. Sometimes you literally got to grab them by the hand and show up at their AA for 12 years with them. You got to help put their family back together. That's hard. Who would want to do that? Like, do you ever just want to call for a sub? Like, look, some of you are a little bit up there in age, right? I'm just cresting 50. You've served Jesus for a long time, right? I'm sure, like me, you have those thoughts. Like, look, I'm tapping out for a while. Let the youngies do the Jesus stuff. I put in my time. And yet, the scriptures do not declare that there's an age limit on when Jesus stops saying, follow me. That if, a great friend once told me, if you're not dead, he still is thinking about you and what he would love to do with you. And I would encourage all of you. It's the same thing. To me, it's not a, you must, you have to, you got to go. It's the fact that, isn't it cool to think that at 89 years of age, Jesus sees you sleeping and he's waiting for you when you wake up, and he would still go, come on, I have some stuff for you to do. And so you're going to have to go to people. For Cheryl and I, we learned that going to people, we can't just add all sorts of stuff. All we can do is see everywhere we're at as a mission field. And so Cheryl said, we got 21 meals. Let's give 7, 8 of those a week away. We just began. On the weekends, we'd throw parties. We'd bring 15, 20 people over, watch a Bronco game. We'd do it every week. And I'd grab some guys before I go off to paint a house, a couple men Monday morning, maybe 4 or 5 men Thursday morning for a little breakfast before work, maybe 1 or 2 men for lunch throughout the week. Cheryl would grab a few gals. We would just kind of give up meals. And we said, we can still open the door. We moved the barbecue from the backyard to the front yard. I remember literally dragging it around. And first barbecue. Now, guys, this is a missionary skill. Anywhere in the world, this works. You put a chunk of meat on a barbecue, and other men who you'd never have any way to connect will literally smell that, and they will say to their wife, I'll be right back. And like cavemen coming out of a cave, they will come to you, and they will go, what's on the grill? Meat. And a friendship will form. like it did with my buddy Steve. And Steve's whole family came to faith in Jesus. See, the sent life, God knows we're all busy. He knows our culture. But he's smart. He will say really crazy things like that would reach the whole world. He just would say, all the law and the prophets now hinge on this one thing. Love God with all your heart, mind, soul, and strength. And then what? Just pull the barbecue around in your front yard, knucklehead, and turn it on, throw some meat on there, and learn how to love your neighbors as much as you love yourself. It was this plan for reaching the whole. You don't have to do all this. You never have to do outreach. You never have to, like, go try to share the gospel. God has set up the whole thing. If you just love people closest to you, something happens. And then the last thing I would maybe leave you with, if you're going to be a sent person, you have to leave something. You're going to have to actually commit to people. But third is that you just do it day by day. As I think about, we've been in Alton now. My wife's been there 10 days, but I've been traveling, so I've only been there 7 days. People have asked, well, what are you going to do in Alton? Like, why is God sending you there? I have no idea. I haven't heard him say start a church. I think maybe he's wanting us to start some businesses because there's no business in town, but I don't know for sure. But I've learned that as Jesus met with his disciples the very last night, remember he said, I'm going to go be with Dad now. I'm going to now hand off. I'm going to bestow upon you the kingdom of heaven. Like the way you've seen me walk in the neighborhood, just go live like that. And so that's what we're going to do because he said, I'm going to give you the Holy Spirit. Quit freaking out. Can't tell you everything. I don't know how it's going to play out, but just today, would you wake up and ask me what to do? And then when you get a little crazy, weird idea, try to actually follow through with it. Case in point, about 8 months ago, I actually woke up and I was desperate to see the power of God. I remember thinking, I just need to see you show up today. So I actually had a cup of coffee and I told God verbally, I'm signing up for duty today. I got some stuff to do, but if you want to reroute any part of my day, I'm going to try to keep my eyes open. And so I said, God, who do you want me to pray for today? And immediately, before I even got done saying it, a picture of this guy named Justin came to my mind. Justin was a yoga instructor I ran into. And so I thought it was weird. I was like, oh, God, I guess I pray for Justin today. And I wasn't quite sure what to pray because I hadn't seen him for quite a while. So I just said, you know, God, be with Justin. Send people to Justin. As I was saying, God, send people to Justin, I thought, well, that sounds dumb because maybe you're at. So, God, if you can connect me with Justin today, I'm open to it. So the prayer was over. I went off to work out, stopped by a Jamba Juice in a town of 2 million people. And guess who's right in front of me in line at the Jamba Juice? So I was like kind of giggling, but like this stuff works. Just, you know, totally amazed. Like, you know, it's not coincidence that God loves it anytime his people say, I'm signing up for duty. And God's, as the scriptures say, he's always at work. So he's, even when we're not thinking about anybody, God's thinking about everybody. And so I pinched Justin on the rear end. And he turned around, he gave me a huge hug. He goes, so weird. He goes, this morning, I couldn't get your face out of my, like, consciousness. And I was just thinking, not weird at all, dude. And so that was it. I didn't know what else to do. I didn't have a master plan of how to reach Justin. So we just left. And the next morning, I remember thanking God, like, that was cool that you did that. And I said, so day two, God, what do you want me to do today? And it was just Justin's face again. So I just said, all right, God, I keep praying for Justin. And God, if there's any way really you could form something between me and him, I'd love to do that. So Cheryl and I went out antiquing 40 minutes away, cross town, and guess who's antiquing with his girlfriend? And so Justin sees me before I see him, and he comes running down the aisle, and he goes, dude, this, and he's a yoga guy. He's super spiritual. Everything sort of is, you know, connected to the heavens. And he goes, you think there's a reason why we've, like, run into each other 2 days in a row? And I'm like, pretty sure there is. And he goes, so, like, what should we do about it? I said, let's become lifelong friends. And he goes, I like that. Like, how do we do that? I was like, well, we got to quit like just floating around Denver and running into each other. Like, let's just meet every week and let's get to know each other's story and let's talk about stuff that's meaningful. And so we did. We got together the very first breakfast and I said, okay, so what can we start to talk about? Let's like hear each other's story, but like, what can we talk about? He goes, well, you're into that Jesus stuff. Why don't we just do the teachings of Jesus for a while? And so that's actually one of the reasons why I didn't want to leave Denver, is that God was doing something. What I've learned is that as God sends you, he knows exactly where he's sending you, that when you get wild, dumb ideas that hit your head and your heart about people, it might just be somebody you just go, dear Cheryl, just want to encourage you today. Know that you're being thought about and you stick that in the mailbox. Sometimes that changes lives. If you just simply obey what's there in front of you. So when you think about the story, I really don't want you to think about lost friends out there. I want you to think about you. Like, no matter how old you are, that tomorrow morning, take today off. It's Sunday. It's the Super Bowl. I don't think God's expecting anything today, okay? But tomorrow morning, whether you're 92 or you're 18, wouldn't you love to see the power of God? And wouldn't you love to hear him just sort of nudge, stick a finger, and just go, look, I intend to use you if you will just free up a little space for me. You're a part of a very rich history and church. This church was started because one person got a finger, said, follow me. And they cruised into Danville. And they began to set up shop, and they began to love people, and you get to benefit from that. Many of you have been a part of this for many, many years, and yet you recognize your church is in transition like most churches in America. You have a leadership transition going on. There's lots of different ideas of, well, how do we make sure we do church right? I will tell you this, because I consult with so many churches today, I have found this to be true, is that God always favors and he always blesses a church that's made up of missionaries. And that if you will not worry too much about, maybe don't worry at all about what happens on the inside, and you'll just say, just imagine if every one of you tomorrow morning went, I'm not going to worry about the church. Jesus said, I'll build my church. Don't worry about that. But if each one of us in our own little space, our own little neighborhood would say, God, here I am, send me. God will take care of this church. And it may have another 100 years to go. If we don't, if we just worry about the church and try to keep church the way we like it, and if we never learn to be sent, I can absolutely tell you that what you never want to have happen to this church will happen, because it's happening to thousands of churches. But God will always bless the sent people. I want to just end with this. This is Isaiah. And just hear the heart of God for you today. It says, then I heard a voice of the Lord saying, whom shall I send? Amazing to think that God Almighty, in that moment for him and the Trinity, really, went, is there anybody that will go? And who is willing to go for us? And then Isaiah said, here I am, send me. Jesus took on your flesh. He left Dad's house, perfect communion with Holy Spirit and the Father, and he came to earth. We call it the incarnation. And the Word became flesh, and he made his dwelling among us. He moved into the neighborhood. He intended to come and die for our sins, but he also intended to teach us how to live and be human again with people around us. He is the archetype of our new humanity. It's your opportunity to not just out of guilt, please don't ever do it out of guilt, but out of just pure, as for the love of Christ compels us. As Paul would say, I've been crucified with Christ, so it's no longer Hugh Halter that gets to live his life on the ranch, but it's Christ who lives in me. This is your opportunity to be sent. So may God favor you, may he bless you, may he surprise you with strange, weird thoughts about weird people. And would you experience his joy in knowing that you've obeyed and God did something that might change literally the legacy of families because of what you do on a given day. So Thanks for listening. Have a good life. Okay?